All right, we're live on the Avery Adventures podcast on YouTube. I'm here with Kelly Broker. We co-own goats, so we thought we'd get Mark Wernke on here to talk more about goats. He owns PatGoats.com, and he's a pat goat aficionado. If this podcast, as always, is brought to you by Rockside.com and BertramBrass.com, and we'd appreciate you supporting them because they support us. Mark, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. It's fun.
So first question is I always hear about pat goats, and I kind of wanted to jump right on that. Is everybody always brings up how pat goats are harmful to bighorn sheep. Can you give us a little bit of background on that and why it is or is not true?
Well, so I like to just speak about like the things that we can be in control of, right? So number one is my string is tested, and they can't give anything to anybody that they don't have, right? That shit doesn't just magically float through the air from the neighbor three ways down the hall, and all of a sudden they magically have a cough that they're going to give a sheep a cough, right? I mean, it's nose-to-nose contact. It's all kinds of things that have to have that happen. Plus, there's just literally no proof of a sheep dying from a goat giving them something. That still doesn't exist. The only thing that actually happened is they coexisted some wild sheep and some goats. They let them hang out together for about 6 months. Nobody got sick. Everybody hung out. They all did their thing. Then they gave the goats goat movi, and the goat movi then was transferred to the sheep. Everybody got sick. Everybody got kind of coughy, and then everybody got better. And then the biologist went, wow, everybody's better. Wonder what happened. So he conked one over the head, tested it, and said, yeah, there's movi in his lungs. It must kill sheep. Oh, yeah, forgot. I killed it, right? So that's as close as they've gotten to it. And at the same time, even if you want to argue that case, what I always say is, number one, we know that pat goats last year all got tested. There was like 560 pat goats in the test. Of those, I think it was either 9 or 12 actually had movi, and they were all juveniles. They were all babies. They don't quite understand how movi really works yet, but they know that goats are really resilient with it, and goat movi is different than sheep movi, yet goats and sheep keep getting put in the same category, and biologically they're two completely different animals. So all they know is that 9 little baby goats had movi, but not a single adult in the pat goat community. Then if you just take that statistic, we're now dealing with less than 1%. And you take that less than 1% that might have movi, and then you put them in the field, and then that owner has to lose that goat. Then that goat then has to go find a wild sheep, and then that goat has to go touch noses with that wild sheep. The risk factor is so infinitesimal, it's really ridiculous that we're being regulated in any way, shape, or form.
Is there, like, so obviously wild sheep, are they the ones driving that train that this is happening?
Yeah, it's their critter of fancy, right? I mean, it's just like people who are cat people or sheep people or whatever. I mean, I love wild sheep just as much as the wild sheep folks, and I would never jeopardize them. That's why my string is tested. And even that is probably over and above what I need to do because, again, there's no proof that goats can kill sheep. There just isn't. But I'm still willing to do that. I'm still willing to avoid some of those areas. I'm still willing to have my goats under control. I'm still willing to have them tethered at night so they can't get away. And I just don't want my goats to get lost because I love them, not only because I'm protecting sheep. And, you know, so yeah, it's the wild sheep that are pushing that agenda. And the problem is what they want is zero risk. Well, the reality is there is no such thing as zero risk. And they're willing to sacrifice a lot of things, including the ludicrous fact that they're currently killing all the mountain goats or want to in the Grays River Range to protect sheep. Those are mountain goats. I mean, every mountain goat in the country has movi, and there's still sheep and wild mountain goats coexisting and doing incredibly well. So in my opinion, it's not about eliminating this, making this bubble around this one species where no human or anything can interact except for somebody who happens to draw a lucky tag. But instead, let's work on things like bolstering the immune systems of wild sheep and helping them with selenium and all the other solutions that have been presented rather than just locking up the wilderness and protecting one animal.
That's pretty clear cut. I just read a thing where they tested a bunch of horses and cows and they all had movi too. So where does it really end if you want to go down that road?
Well, not only that, mule deer, whitetail, caribou, moose, all those have been found with MOVI strains. So again, is MOVI or goats or anything like that? No, it's just the weaker immune systems, because there are entire sheep herds as well, wild sheep herds existing and thriving that have MOVI. What's the difference? Well, they have high selenium contents. Their immune systems are robust. The reality is we just need to help bolster the immune systems. I mean, a group back in the Grays River Range 20 years ago had huge success literally putting selenium blocks on the top of mountains so that sheep could bolster their immune system. Yet that option isn't even being considered at this point, and I think it's ludicrous.
So do you think is there a way, like, what would you say? Because pack goats are relatively new, as you bring that up a lot, that really new to the hunting scene. How does somebody go on and support pack goats so there isn't legislation brought down to stop pack goats from being used in the backcountry?
So we have a group called NAPCA. It's Northwest Association of Pack Goat, and they can join NAPCA. It costs a whopping $20 a month. Luckily, we've had a few members of that and people in the community who have passed away and willed money to that organization, and we underpay a lawyer to try to fight the millions of dollars that the Wild Sheep Foundation has. It's a true grassroots. Now, the other benefit is that these are state agencies they're dealing with, that we're dealing with, so they can't necessarily be bought, right? But I'm really skeptical of the science that's being presented and the science that is being bought to back the agenda.
And who's driving that? Who's driving the fake science?
Well, and I wouldn't say fake science. I would say biased science, right? So biased science. And then as well, the inclusion with pack goats and sheep being wool sheep as the same animal. Because all these issues are legislated with, they all say pack goats and sheep, or goats and sheep. Well, goats and sheep are not even close to the same animal. And the FDA and their leading researcher is trying to separate those. So National Forest will treat those as two different critters. And currently they're just not.
Oh, I really didn't realize that.
Yeah. Biologically, they're just different, and they have different strains and different bacteria and different things. As well as when you let loose 2,000 wool sheep on free range, that's a completely different thing than a guy with six of his goats that he's hand raised and bottle fed their whole lives. To not even the same critter, not even the same habits, none of the same characteristics.
So Western Bounty, which is Desiree Stark, said that, how do you call it? NAPGA? How do you say that?
NAPGA, N-A-P-G-A.
NAPGA spent around $25,000 just fighting the Shoshone closure. What's the Shoshone closure?
Right.
What is that?
Well, that's where they limited us on certain areas and corridors where the largest wild sheep population exists in Wyoming. And unfortunately, what we tried to do just to place a middle ground is have a piece of paper from a vet that says our goat was tested. The problem is that's about $100 per goat. Now, for the people that are willing to do that and go into those areas and do that, super cool. But we weren't even given that option in that area. Even certificate tested goats are not going to be allowed in there. And again, it's kind of which bureaucrat is which excited and what their agenda is. There's still those decisions. This is not a public vote. This is a guy sitting in the desk at the head of the National Forest who's making those decisions. You know, it's supposed to be on behalf of public, you know, sentiment and the best for the land. But obviously there's human beings involved, so we still are going to sway one way or the other.
I hate to keep beating this horse to death, but so the Wyoming Fish and Game is the one spearheading that? Is it backed by any organization?
No. Generally, it's the National Forest. It's the wilderness area. And they're using Fish and Game as an additional resource to help gather the information on how the wild game species are affected and how the domestic stock is interrelated. It's kind of their biological arm, I would guess. Now, all this I say, know that I'm not a legislative or biological expert. I'm just somebody who pays attention to the issues. I'm sure that there are points of contention with what I would say in the opposing side. But again, my goal is to bless wild sheep and bless pack goats, because I think we can work really well together and pose little or no risk to any population.
Well, it's an education thing. I didn't know nothing about that. I never even really heard about it, tell you the truth.
Well, for me, there's just several facts that just chop off the arms of the argument. And that is, there's Movian sheep, deer, mountain goats, caribou, moose. So why can't I go? Right. I just like that. And the fact that my string is tested, they can't give anything that they don't have. Okay, well, why are we even having this conversation then? So it's really frustrating for me that we have to get into these deeper tiers, because it's just a non-issue. It's just fear. They're scared, which I understand. It's a very deer species, but not at the cost, you know, of allowing fear to make, you know, outside decisions.
Mark, you say they were using the selenium on blocks in the mountains and they quit doing that. Why did they quit?
So John Myasinski is kind of the grandfather of pack goats. He, 1972, he was the first one to put 2 2x4s, and he cut a handle of a shovel in 4 pieces, wired it together with wire, and that was the first crossbuck that was put on a goat. And what people don't realize is the reason John did that is he was studying wild sheep in the winds in the Shoshone wilderness that we were just talking about. He was the leading researcher on behalf of those wild sheep and trying to figure out why there were die-offs. His, I think it was 5 or 6 year study, determined that acid rain falling at high elevations was killing a legume that was transferring selenium into the plants, and the sheep and the high elevation species were being deprived of selenium, which is a key mineral that helps systems, especially of high elevation species. And all the while, he was studying sheep with goats. So he had pack goats there packing in all his equipment, and his analysis was, we need to drop selenium blocks out of helicopters on the top of all these mountains and these sheep will get better. So they did it for 3 years. First year, lamb ratio survival rate ran up to almost 80%, where it was previously like 20. So that means the population is going down. They turned it around in 1 year. Second year, again, similar results. Third year, they had big winter die-offs and it skewed the results. And then the Shoshone threw up their hands and said, that's too expensive, we're not doing it anymore. And it's thrown the baby out with the bathwater. John Myasinski still to this day is still fighting through a pro advocacy group on behalf of wild sheep, trying to get them to hear all the studies that he did and how beneficial selenium is for sheep if we just put it out for them.
Interesting.
Yeah. So again, yeah, interesting that that's being cast off.
All right, let's shift gears here. Whether you wanted to or not, you become the goat man, I guess, the packgoat.com. You're the voice of this pack goat, I guess, conspiracy or revolution, wherever you want to call it.
Right.
So take us back to why you started it. Why not llamas? Why not mules? Why not, you know, hell, alpacas? Why did you start with goats and kind of bring us up to where you are now with them?
So I packed with all of them. You put me on a horse, by mile 2, that saddle's 3/4 the way up my ass and I'm friggin' nervous. Right. Those things, I'm just ready for them to stomp me into a pile of goo, which I don't care how experienced you are in horses and mules. You've had a near-death experience, right? It's just how it is. So I just didn't want any of that with my kids or my wife or any of that stuff. So I packed in on a lot of stock. Llamas, they're cool. They got some things to them that are cool, but they lack all kinds of personality. They're like social retards. They don't even, I mean, if they let you pet them, they don't, it's like, maybe let me pet them. They're super expensive, so there's a cost prohibitive side. And they're an animal that I have to tug and pull the whole time. They don't love to be with you, so I'm dragging them around rather than following me around. So for me, llamas on multiple different levels weren't the right choice. And I was looking for a stock alternative to get my wife and my kids in the woods with me. I mean, I had been packing in on my back for years, and I just knew they weren't willing to do what I had to do to get some comfort in there and some food in there. And so those sorts of things. So I looked into goats. I also live with the wife, or at the past, my ex-wife now, but and we had an urban home with a couple acres, and there was just no way I could really have any kind of bigger stock in there, but they would allow goats. So it gave me multiple reasons to try it. And I was like everybody else. When I first entertained having goats, I kind of thought of that neighbor's billy goat that I was scared of as a kid. And so many people talk about that. And you guys know this now because you guys are goat owners. But what I never knew and what most people don't know is these things are as loyal and loving as a golden retriever. I mean, almost a pain in the ass loving. When I'm out there trying to work on something, I always got a goat like right here in my face begging to be pet. You know, they're just these big buckets with a hole in it. They're fun to have in camp. They love to be with you. People ask me often, well, are they ever going to leave you? Hell no, they'd be desperate without me. They follow out of love and out of connection. So they've got this anointed critter piece to them. So that really was my process. And my whole goal, once I realized what a great secret weapon they were, mm-hmm. is I never wanted to tell anybody. But I also realized that by going public and with my profile in the hunt consulting industry and my following, I could elicit more hunters in this because we needed numbers to be able to help kind of fight for our rights against the Wild Sheep Foundation to maintain public land access. And so I decided to go public. And, you know, there's a lot of new goat owners since then. And guys like you guys have been doing it. How long have you guys been doing it now?
2 years. Two, 3 years.
Okay.
3 years?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Going on 3 years.
So, you know, I mean, again, you still are early adopters. You got to remember by like the year 2000, there was maybe 20 people in the country doing it. Right. I mean, there just weren't that many. And when I got in, there was arguably 200 to maybe 300. And now I think we're well over 1,000 people own pack code strings. And, you know, and I can see why, but I'm going to pay the consequence. One of these years, I'm going to be in my honey hole and a pack code string is going to be rolling in. I'm going to be like, what did I do?
Oh, that's awesome.
Because they're cool. You know how it is. They could get to country, just no other stock can.
One thing that they don't seem to like is the water. We've had trouble getting them across the river, and they'll get across. But first couple of times, they didn't really appreciate it. But then after that, especially if they're tired, they don't care. They just want to go home.
Right.
But
right.
The first initial getting across is a little interesting. Do you have ways you train your goat?
Sure. Yeah, limitation.
What was that?
Yeah, as a baby. Yeah, as a baby, I'm going to have them cross creeks when they're little, and then they never second guess water because I'm mama at that point, right? So when they're babies and I'm crossing water, and I make them cross water up to their bellies. And, you know, at that point, then we just do it regularly that first year, and then I just never have issues. There's actually a video on my YouTube channel, which is just the same as my website, packgoats.com, where I actually show you some of the water crossings my string has done, and you'd be blown away at what's possible. Plus, I teach every goat in my string how to swim. So I actually go in when I'm in a high mountain lake, I hook them up, I kind of coax them into the water, and then I make them swim in a circle. And they swim really well. They just don't know they can until you make them, just like any other animal.
Right.
What do you do if you acquire a goat at like 3.5 or 4, you know, or older goat? What would you suggest doing then?
So, you know, they don't want to go into water. So I just make them do what they don't want to do till they're really comfortable with it. So that means I get my grit on and I coax them. But if they don't want to come, I drag their asses into the middle of a river. I stand them in the water and I just love them up until I feel them relax. Then I walk back out. I come back again and I'll do it over and over and over till that goat finally submits and will just follow me into that water. It's really a 1 day process. Goat is probably the easiest trained animal on the planet because they're super.
Excuse me. Go ahead.
They're just super smart and they don't like being uncomfortable, right?
I know they're extremely intelligent, way more than I give them credit for. A couple of instances up hunting and I was impressed with what they were doing. So.
Yeah. I mean, all you got to do, you always have that one that can open latches and you're like, how the hell did you get that open? Right? I mean, they're smart. They know what's on. They watch you and how you open the latch and they'll come over and try to do it. I mean, they're a super smart critter and they don't like being uncomfortable. They don't like displeasing you, just like a golden retriever. They got a sense of when they're displeasing you and they don't want to do that. So they figure it out fast.
Yeah, that's for sure.
One of the most confusing parts about them is what in the hell do you feed them? Because I've heard everything and anything, and me and Kelly have went back and forth on what we do with them. What does Mark feed his goats, and what is the proper diet for a pack goat?
That's a great question. The only thing is the answer for what I do versus what somebody who's not keeping their goats really fit would do are two different answers. Uh-huh. Because when a goat is being worked hard, he processes higher levels of protein better. So I personally, because I keep my goats in good shape year round, I do 50-50 alfalfa grass hay mix. So I like big, thick bladed brome grass style grass, and I like half alfalfa, because if not, by the end of the packing season, I'll put in 500 to 700 miles in the backcountry this year. All my goats will be rails. They'll just be super thin. So I like to have them have a little bit of extra for the off season, kind of build up a little bit of reserves, and by the end of the season, not have them drop 20 pounds, because they drop weight. So I feed 50-50 alfalfa grass hay mix to both my babies and my adults, and all that's on packgoats.com, by the way. I have both an adult feeding regimen and a baby feeding regimen to grow the biggest baby you can and to keep your packer as healthy as you can, and then minerals, the other mix. And the problem with me telling you here's the magic mineral is minerals different to each area in the United States based on the alfalfa or grass hay they grow in your area. What does your soil have and what's coming out in that? And your local extension office can tell you. The other thing I always tell people for mineral, there's a goat dairy in your area. Whether you know it or not, there is. Those guys know how to do the mineral for their goats, and they'll know your local solution better than any vet or otherwise, because this is something you have discovered. The veterinary industry does not know how to keep a male goat alive more than 1 year. Right. Okay, they just don't. There's no need for it. There's a reason to keep a female goat alive for more than 1 year as a milker, but they don't even barely spend any time on goats, let alone a male goat. We're the only ones that are keeping male goats that are weathered alive for a long period of time. And so in some ways, we're kind of inventing our own science as a group and helping one another out in that information.
Is the grass hay, is that the same thing as Timothy hay?
Timothy is a different kind. So if you're actually looking for orchard grass or just grass hay, Timothy is a different, because it's a wheat head. It actually has like, I have found that they're really wasteful with it because there's a lot of that big stalky stem in it, and they just don't like stems, as you know.
That was another question on your alfalfa. I've found that, you know, I feed them probably 80-20. Alfalfa
right.
to grass, and it's a kind of a stocky alfalfa, so they're leaving a lot of the stock, and then it piles mm-hmm. up. And are you using like a second cut alfalfa or third cut, or?
I use third cut specifically. Okay. Yeah, I use third cut specifically because not only is the grass stem and the alfalfa stem are much, much smaller. Sure. The other thing that I look for is somebody who has what the haying industry calls a conditioner. What a conditioner is on the roller as it cuts the hay, it's little welded lines, and it breaks the stalk of that stem. And if you break that stem up, they'll actually be more apt to eat it. And third cut is way smaller than first cut by a mile. Other thing that I do, go ahead.
No, it's more expensive for that reason, I think, because third cut seems to be always more expensive in the market than the first cut or second cut.
It is a little, for sure. Yeah, because the rest of the critters struggle with that stem as well. Sure. But I do recommend also, too, people have a tendency to think, you got to remember, those portions of the alfalfa still have that nutrition. And you put a goat where this is one of the magic things about goats on a global level. The reason more people eat goats than they do cows is goats can make a living on land that other stock animals can't, because they're resourceful in what they eat. So when a food enters a goat, it can take up to 6 days to come out his ass. So they have the capability to pull out nutrition out of things that other animals just can't, right? So they will eat that stem if they're hungry enough. Sure. So what I recommend, remember, a good goat is a thinner goat. A fat goat is always a pain in your balls. So if you can have the capability to have a goat that's kind of forced to eat those little stems and chaff, my boys don't get fed till they eat their food. basically is what I'm saying. So I have very little waste, and you know, and there's even a feeder style that I recommend that you use that promotes them to eat all their food, because they can get underneath it and get all the little tiddly bits that fall off. You know, the chaff that falls off that normally piles up in the bottom of the feeder, and then you end up with mucky, like nasty mildew. We do in the bottom. Well, if you let it fall on the ground underneath and it's protected and they can get to it, then they'll eat all that down below as well. I get almost no waste.
Interesting.
What if you gave one Taco Bell? Would he shit that out in a day?
He probably shit it out in the form of a liquid, dude. Just like us, right?
Exactly. So do you feed any of pet, like when you had the podcast with Dwayne, or is it Dwight?
Yeah.
He talked about he feeds his pellets. You don't feed him any pellets, but if you did, what would you feed him?
Well, so that diet is on packoats.com, and I've never fed pellets, mostly because he has his own pellet mix made.
Right.
And it is one of the things that I'm thinking about starting to do, is try to get some kind of bulk manufacturer to help me to develop a pellet specifically for adult pack goats, so we can quit mucking around with all this different shit. We can just place our order and have a pallet show up, you know, because then there's zero waste. It's all controlled. You know exactly what you're feeding. There isn't pesticides if you don't want it. Mm-hmm. And it's the perfect mixture for an adult weather. So I'm this close to putting that kind of stuff together, and I think it'll be similar in cost.
Because that's what I noticed when we started feeding them pellets not too long ago, is they eat it all. I mean, there's very little waste unless you see some sense.
No, it's a kind of, it's an alfalfa cube is what it is, probably an inch and a half square, and it, you know, it could be 2 inches or an inch long, and it's real hard, but they chew it up, and they're, like I say, there's little waste. But I built a feeder for them, and there was a lot of waste on the ground, because once it's on the ground, for some reason, they just, if they don't eat it right away, they won't go back and eat it later. It gets wet or for whatever reason. But now with the feeders there, they're cleaning it up pretty good. Other than the heavy stalks of the alfalfa itself, they're not eating
Right. Well, see, and that's where we'd eliminate that too, because we'd be chewing it up, you know, for them beforehand and pelletizing it. So I am looking into that, because somebody's got to try to get kind of this streamlined and available. Shipping might eat us up, but I don't know. I'd like to see something really standard that we can all have as a resource.
Where do you go to talk? Who do you talk to about doing something like that? I mean, Purina?
I don't know. You know, maybe.
Don't
I think it's more of
supply.
A. Right. Okay. All right. I don't know yet. I haven't gotten there yet. You know, this is you know, packoats.com has been an attempt to help people. And if I got to kind of keep the lights on with selling a few saddles and panniers, then awesome. And honestly, that's still what it is. This is a labor of love. I still haven't made a profit yet. I really enjoy helping people into this. It's my passion. I make my money as a hunting consultant, and that provides me enough with time and energy to be really passionate about pack goats, but who knows? I mean, I really think there's something bigger for me in the whole goat thing. Sounds dumb, but they're just a special critter.
So on the, just so I'm clear with it, like on the meat goat that they sell at like Tractor Supply, the Perino or the their own brand, you would not sell, you wouldn't give your goats that, or you would?
I do year one. So grain is safe for a growing pack goat, but after 1 year old, it then can create urinary calculi, which will kill them. So what'll happen is they'll get stones in their bladder, it'll plug up their penis, and then they'll die because their bladder will burst. So it's a calcium versus phosphorus mix. Calcium. Anyway, sorry, it's late in the afternoon. I can't remember the act. But anyway, they get urinary calculi. Grain is very dangerous to feed any weather. It's arguable at 1 or 2 years, but nobody gives it beyond 2. So I personally stop at 1. Dwight's feeding regimen recommends to the second year, but then you par them off. You don't leave it free choice. But all my baby pack goats have free choice grain till they're 1 year old. Now know this, I have 2 goats right now. One is 1 year and 2 months old. The other one just turned a year. One is 194 pounds and the other is 164 pounds. Hmm. That's what good nutrition and the proper genetics can do. That one goat will be 42, 43 inches at the withers and weigh 300 pounds. And I can put 100 pounds on his back. Wow. So, yeah,
there is
some
like
monsters.
No, that, those are monsters. There's no grain free pellets out there.
Well, no, there's alfalfa pellets.
Right.
Right. Yeah. There's just pure alfalfa pellets. But as far as like I use when I'm growing babies, I use Purina grower goat. They used to call it meat goat. It's got a bower on the cover. It's all about gaining muscle and it's just got the right protein content to grow a goat.
Gotcha. I think Dwight talked about a noble goat feed. And
yeah, that's what they used to call it.
Yeah, and I'm having a hard time finding it, but did they change the name of it or something?
They did. And if you go to packgoats.com and look at the suggested kid program and the suggested adult program, we actually edited that post this year to put the proper name. Purina has changed it 3 times. It used to be noble goat, then it was grower goat, or excuse me, then it was meat goat, and now it's grower goat is okay. What it's called. Okay. All three of them, though, had a picture of a boer on the cover of it, a big brown and white goat.
I see.
So if you don't work your goats out, say in the wintertime all the time, what would your diet be then?
That's when I'd just straight grass hay, right? And especially, you know, grass hay, just most of it doesn't have the protein content that alfalfa does. But one of the benefits of alfalfa is that it has a tendency to acidify their urine, right? So when you feed 50-50, the acidified urine is your benefit. It's your blessing to make sure that you don't get urinary calculi, right? So it's kind of an added insurance program. So I still really like it. And you should be fine with most alpine and dairy breeds where you won't get a big fat ass by the end of the winter. But if you're starting to have some of these meat goats, these pure Kikos and these pure Boers, or even 50-50 crosses, you're going to have to be really wary of a goat that's been bred to eat, right? I mean, that's all he's bred to eat for. Yeah, right. Everybody's got that look. They look at their buddy and say, yeah, it's Charlie, right? It's that goat that's always got his head shoved in the feeder, right? So that goat, you should be able to feel your goat along the side, right behind their front arm, and you should feel ribs. If you can't feel ribs, then your goat is fat. Right. So I like my goats to go into season just a little bit fat. By the time spring bear is over and I've packed in a bunch of bait, everybody's starting to get into shape. Then I'm ready for summer scouting season. And by the time hunting season comes around, everybody's ripped. You know, they're ready to roll. So that's kind of my system. I give them a little bit of time to recover after hunting season and just leave them alone, let them heal, let them get back together because they just put so many miles on them.
Right.
What is your workout regimen, like off season, on season? What is?
So it's kind of changed. This year is the first year, and I'm gonna call this year my experiment, but really it's called my divorce and my change in my business and all the other stuff, right? I had to move into a house and just know I didn't go to war with my ex. She's a great lady. It's just one of those things that just shows up in life. And anyway, but I had to build goat barns and a hay barn, and I had to, you know, fix up a new house and everything else. And I moved in October. So for me, this is the first off season. Normally in the off season, I'm running 3.5 miles one time a week with my whole string. And that's what I do. Nobody gets out of shape. Nobody's getting their ass kicked, but nobody's getting out of shape. This year, I let them get out of shape, but I also monitored their food. And I also don't have any dudes that are constantly sticking their head in the feed bin and getting really fat. So we'll see how this year goes. I'm letting them go into the initial season a little bit fatter than I ever have before. And I'm going to test this piece too. But in my opinion, one of the mistakes the breeding industry has been making, and pack goaters in general, is that they're thinking that the width and the musculature of the meat goat industry, of the meat goats, are how we're going to get these big bulky goats. And it is. We do need a little bit of width, but we need height more than we need width, and we need a fit goat more than a fat goat. So I really like that 1/4 meat goat and 3/4 dairy goat. So my two favorite crosses are Saber Alpine Cross, which is a Saanen crossed with a Boer and then bred to a full bred Alpine. So it's really? Saber is a Saanen Boer cross bred to an Alpine is one of my favorite mixes. And then one of my other favorite mixes is Oberhalsey Alpine Cross. And I like that one because those are going to be my string leaders and those are going to be my get up super athletic goers, where my Saber Alpine Crosses are going to be my linebackers that I can throw 100 pounds on and still have them go all day. But nobody's so big. I put it like this. You got to remember, we're basically trying to raise a goat to win a Spartan race. So if you look at Spartan racers, they're not big fat dudes. They're not big lineman guys. They're not that. They're rails. They look like Ben Greenfield. They're 180 pounds. They're 6'2". They're chiseled. They're muscular. But they don't have anything extra on them.
Basically,
that's what
like
we're looking
me.
For
basically
in a goat.
Like me.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's what I was saying. Didn't you hear that?
He's just working on the height.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's right. So that's what we're looking for. We're looking for an endurance athlete, right, that can recover. We're not looking for a dude that just plops down in camp and is done. You know, we want that guy that gets in camp, goes, okay, I'm ready. You know, I'm good. I'm ready to go. Not that guy that needs days of recovery.
Right.
That's interesting. Go ahead.
I've got a question on meds. And I listened to your podcast with Dwight, and I don't remember you guys bringing it up. We don't have any idea what they need or don't need, I guess. Can you give me an idea or give us an idea what the proper medications is as far as shots?
So every year you give them the CD and T, which is basically like tetanus, right? It's CD and T, and it counts for a couple of different things. That's what you give them every year. And then you want to make sure that you do fecal samples twice a year. Because remember, the number one killer, well, one of the top killers of goats is parasites. So they're really susceptible to different forms of worms, especially the barber pole worm and other forms. Do you guys not have a good vet that you're working with?
Well, we're struggling with a vet.
We have not found a good vet.
We lost on last winter. Pretty sure it was Stones. I couldn't get a vet to call me back to even ask him about it, what the problem might be.
Right.
And I finally ended up having to put it down. So
I'm
really frustrated. On the CDT, what is the dosage?
CDT. If you research it online, it'll tell you what it is.
Okay.
Yeah. And that is available in almost any feed store.
Right. Right.
So yeah, that'll be in a feed store. It's a syringe. I'm going to start trying to help people with syringes as well, because those feed store syringes are super expensive. And if you're worming and you're vaccinating and I give a shot of a mineral every year. Something to look out for to see if your goats are having a proper mineral. It's called fishtail. If you want to Google it. It's fish as in a fish that swims, tail. So what happens is the tail of the goat looks like this, and that tells you that they have a copper deficiency. And copper is really important for their immune system as well, and especially fighting parasites. So for example, because I'm very diligent with my mineral levels, in fact, I even tested recently one of my goats for his mineral content just to see if my guys were sitting pretty, and they were, and I haven't wormed my goats for 3 years. Now, that's very uncommon. That's very uncommon. But you shouldn't just arbitrarily worm your goats. You should test their poop. And when you have their poop tested. And by the way, there's an online site you can do that on. You just collect a couple of their berries. You put in a little Ziploc bag. You send it to a site. They actually evaluate it, and they recommend what wormer you use to treat it.
Okay.
How much
is that? I think it's like $25 a goat, something like that. And you can do it like once a year, and then you know, you're not guessing.
Right.
But it's almost always most of your goats will have uniform parasites. So if you test one, it's fairly uniform for the rest. But be really careful about doing that, especially if you have old and young, because they lose their resistance as they age or if their health goes. Another thing to bear in mind, your goats are 5, 6 years old now then? Is that right?
Five and a half, okay. I think, this year.
So within the next year or so, you're going to want to have you need to get a relationship with a vet, because they're going to help you with some things you can't do on your own. And also a lot of the medications now are by prescription, by vet only. So It's the only choice is to have that. But one of the things you want to be conscientious of is that your goats, what kills all herbivores is their teeth. So their teeth is what kills an herbivore. So what happens with a goat is, instead of being flat and grinding their teeth like this, they end up being kind of mountainous, and they get like high spikes, and they can't grind their food right. And as soon as they can't grind their food right, they can't digest right, and they just slowly start waning, and then that's what kills them. So what they do is, just like a horse, it's called floating their teeth, and they go in and they file their teeth flat so they can grind their food better. And I've literally had a goat that I just couldn't figure it out. I wormed him. I gave him vaccinations. I upped his nutrition. I gave him some mineral shots. I could not get him to put on weight. And I said, let's just look at his teeth. I wonder if that's what it is. And my vet said, holy shit, he needs it bad. And so we went in, did his teeth. He didn't gain weight right away, but he was a whole new goat literally in like a week. It was amazing to see the turnaround. So usually you're going to have to do it once or twice in the life of that goat, once at about 6 to 8 and another time maybe at 9 to 10.
The whole vet thing's been kind of a fucking nightmare. How did you find your vet?
You know what I did is I found a young vet fresh out of school. She was a lady, and what she was willing to do is that I just had a really frank conversation with her, and I said, you know, the reason I picked you is because I think you're willing to do the research to find the right answers, because I know you didn't spend any time in it in school, right? And she went, right. And I said, okay, so let's work together, because you got some skills I don't, and let's learn these adult male goats, because I know myself, there are multiple other people in this valley that need somebody here to know that information, and let's just work together to do it. So I had her communicating with NAPCA. I had her calling Dwight directly. I had her calling Dr. Deb, which is Dwight's goat. She just actually saved one of my babies yesterday, and she's become super, super good. That's another thing that we might be able to do on PatGoats.com is make an adult weathered vet available by phone to anybody who wants to call her, because there's just some times, like I just had a little baby goat die of what was called salt toxicity. I had never even heard of it. I didn't even know what it was, right? And what happened is we had transport stuff going on, immune system was weak, all kinds of things, brought him home. I let him go ahead and have free choice grain just like I would with the normal goat when he brought home. That little guy was stressed enough to where when he actually, there was salt in the grain, it boosted his salt levels, and all of a sudden he had like a neurological response. He was staring off into space, and he was walking all stiff-legged, and it was awful, and he literally died in my arms in like 20 minutes. It was just super quick, like ridiculous, like seizures and stuff, death. But and then I had another one react to it, and I called her, and she troubleshot it, and we saved his life. So it's stuff like that. I mean, every animal's got its little idiosyncrasies, but you guys know, and as I know, that it's not like they're this brainless, throw them out into the pasture and shit's going to go right. You got to trim hooves. You got to know how to give shots. You know, you got to get them the right feed. You know, it's a little more than people think it is.
Right.
Yeah. Kelly bears the brunt of that. And we talked about that a few weeks ago, because he kind of thought you just let them out there and they do their own thing. But
finding out
that, that didn't happen.
Yeah. It's a lot more involved than we thought at the start.
It is. Yeah. Well, and it, again, all that action ends up being that necessary hands-on time with them anyway. Because You know how it is when you haven't really you got busy for a couple of months and you just threw them flakes and that's about all the attention they got. Everybody kind of starts getting a little standoffish. But if you actually slow down a little, and every time you enter the pasture, I call my goats. Like if I went out right now and stepped out this door in the office and called goats, they would all run. and they wouldn't run because I was going to feed them. They would run because they would know they were going to get love, right? So these guys starve for love. So if we could just slow down just a little bit and lay hands on them, all these activities that we do help us to have that connection with them anyway. So I kind of like that that's what it takes. I think it's cool. And wait till you guys start having babies and having does that have babies and giving birth. It's all everything changes, man. It's awesome. I don't know if you guys have watched. Go ahead. Sorry.
So the babies are going to stay at Ryan's house.
It's so fun to help, to have your own doe and to have her producing kids. And, you know, I milk and everything. It's really, goat milk's like this anointed stuff. It's super good for you. And I'm all into it. Well, I guess maybe that's true. So who knows? Not everybody likes it, but I want to tell you that it is really a super neat all around family thing for the kids to get involved with and everybody. And it just can be such a benefit in that way. But having, you got to remember how many kids in today's world don't witness birth anymore.
Right.
I mean, think about it. When we grew up, we saw cats get born and dogs get born and maybe a cow or a horse. I know I did. Yeah. And kids today, they don't see shit get born ever. I mean, there's people that are 40 years old that have never seen something born before. And I'm like, really? So it's kind of cool to have that piece. And, you know, I do recommend it. It's neat.
On the worming, just to clarify on that, you're always using that stool sample to know if you need to worm them or not.
Correct. Because not only is it going to tell me the difference between a blood sucker and a blood sucker and a food sucker. So now I'm going to be treating with the right wormer, right? And I'm not going to be underdosing or treating something that isn't there. Because remember, you know, if you have 10,000 bugs and you throw a bunch of chemical at them, one of them is going to survive. And that's the one that doesn't get killed the next time. So you don't want to continue. It's really important too that on the label of your wormer, it's never the right dosage. It's always like three times that. So bear in mind the dosages. It's important with a good vet to be able to tell you the proper dosages or somebody in the pack goat community to communicate with you. And there are stuff out there like Safeguard you can get at the feed store that kills more goats than it saves. And the main reason is because all the bugs are resistant to it. It's stuff that they've been using forever. It's kind of like penicillin. It'll only specifically kill a few bugs because it's been in circulation for 30 years. The dosage on Safeguard is 10 times the recommended amount to kill a worm. So it's that kind of stuff. So you got to be conscientious of that too, you know, but that's all researchable. It's all online.
Sure. Cool. Or you call Mark. Do you have any more questions on the diet?
Just one other thing. Nobody seems to mention all the online stuff I've looked at on food and treats, peanuts. These goats that we have absolutely go batshit over peanuts, and nobody talks about it. Have you fed yours peanuts? Is it harmful for them?
If I were to use treats, which I don't, because then it ends up being every time there's a crinkle to anything at camp, I have 8 goats fighting over me, right? So I choose to not use treats, then they never associate me with food because of the consequence. But it's a great training tool and it's fun. It's fun for them, but it's not fun when you have 8 giant horned packers and your grandson or your kid opens up a Snickers bar and all of a sudden he's got 8 giant goats around him, right?
Just gets railroaded.
But it's not harmful.
Right. Not at all. In fact, salted peanuts in the shell, they'll eat it whole, is one of the best treats there are. Yep. Yep. They love the salt too.
Yeah. Cool.
Anything else on this?
I don't think so. The minerals. No.
On your, I kind of want to go through your hunting setup and I kind of want to go through 2 scenarios. When you actually get them to the actual camp, your Elkville, if you guys haven't watched that video, people that are listening, you guys got to go watch Mark's video on Elkville. It's pretty cool. So when you set them up, are you always fencing them in with that fence? Do you let them free reign? Do you tie them down or stake them down or what do you do?
That's a great. So we actually have Elkville 1, 2, and 3, and you're going to see how we got better. Elkville one, the one that you saw with the pasture around it, that was guessing, right? There was no packgoats.com. There was none of that stuff. How the hell am I going to do this? Troubleshooting, trying to figure it out. My theory was keep the goats in, keep predators out, right? And that would allow me to hunt without the goats, because I thought that was something that would be a deterrent. I came back from killing a bull to come get the goats to go pack out my bull, and they were all gone. And what had happened is a bear had chased him out of camp, oh, right? Wow. Yeah. So a bear had chased him through the fence. I had to hike the opposite mountain. I glassed him up on the top of another mountain, hiked up and got him. They still had all their coats on, right? And they all came back and everything was fine. But that made me learn my lesson, right? And as goat packers, let me be real clear to you and the entire audience, it is never okay to leave goats unattended in your camp. You can't do it, both out of responsibility to not having goats that are ever chased out in case a predator does come in camp, mm-hmm. and as well is if you're not there to defend them, they're going to get ate. They just are. So what we recommend in NAPCA, and what I personally do, is I tie everybody to a low line. They're on a low line all night long. When I'm hunting with them, or I have somebody in camp who's hanging out with them. So those are the two scenarios I use. I either hunt with them right alongside me, which is an asset. It's a good thing. I don't know if you've called in bulls with goats around you, but it's a positive, positive thing to have those guys there. And if not, then I bring in a camp jack that kind of runs camp, and, you know, guys that just want to come in. And, you know, I took a 70-year-old man 1 year, a 22-year-old lady another year, and my mom came in another year, you know. So there's people who want to hang out in camp and would love to just watch the goats while you're out hunting. And that's how we do it in Elkville, because we run a base camp. When I'm running the system where I'm sleeping on bulls, the goats have panniers on, my entire camp and everything, and we never lose elevation. We're just chasing bulls. We work a bull the night that evening. We pull into the back drainage. We camp right there, and then we're right on them in 15 minutes the next day without climbing a mountain. It's awesome.
So do you do it? Have you been with them like mule deer hunting? Have you do the same process? Rifle, bow, don't matter.
Mm-hmm. Rifle. Yeah. Rifle. Well, I'm not a rifle hunter. So I haven't done a ton of rifle hunting. But I bow hunt with them, and I sneak in on critters with them. Wow. So, yeah. So what I do is get on all fours and go in super slow. And what critters see is a four-legged animal with horns, and so it makes sense to them. The only thing about rifle season that's really super important is to make sure that you have at least some blaze orange on your goat, or your goats are going to get shot. Yeah. Either that, or you have a hunting partner that does hang back with them, and you make the final approach on your own. That's the other resource. It's just, there's lots of different ways to do it, but the one way nobody can do it is you cannot leave your goats in camp alone. You just can't do that. You don't have the option.
Okay. Good point. Good point. Because I'm sure they do get primed habitat for a cat, bear, wolf, whatever.
Yeah, it's almost always bears. You know, I've had wolves super close to camp a number of times. They're a calculated predator. As soon as they know a human's there, no, they're not interested. Same with a cat. A cat is a calculated predator that's going to take days to decide to do something like that for the most part. But I'll tell you, a bear will just bumble into camp, right? He'll just bumble in there. You know, I mean, that's just how they are. They're just bold. So it's bears that I'm more worried about. And the goal is, all my goats are tied up with a good collar, a good leash, and a good line. I'm going to hear their bells jingling in camp, mm-hmm. and I'm going to come out of that tent with a headlamp on and a .45 ready to defend my goats. That's just what I'm going to do. And I don't want them running off in the dark, because how the hell am I going to protect them then?
Right.
I saw on the first elk bill, you had them underneath a tarp in the rain. Do you still, on that low line, do you still set up a tarp over the top of them?
I do. I always, and if I'm in a 7-day camp, I'm always going to put up at least one tarp for them, because I put up like 3 tarps for me. And you know how it is. If they have a tarp and you have a tarp, then you get your own tarp and they get their own tarp. But if you have the only tarp and it starts raining, everybody's underneath it with you, right? So I don't like goat shit in my camp. So I make them have their own bedroom and I got my own. And every time I roll into a camp, the squirt bottle gets set up on a little center place, and we just teach them the area in about 5 minutes where they can go and where they can't go with that squirt bottle. So my goats really know quick, no matter where we are, where they're allowed and where they're not allowed.
What about, do you do a lot of hiking with them in the summertime when it's hot?
Tons.
My question is water, because the places that I've taken them or we've taken them in the summertime, you know, it's hot and there's no water available. And I actually found a bottle of water hanging from a tree from a bow hunter or something. And I broke it out and they were thirsty. And I had the impression
that
they don't really need that much water, but I'm thinking that they do need water more than maybe.
Correct.
So what do you do?
So the way to always know is how lush their feed is. So if it's really green and wet feed and they're working hard, then for the most part, they're going to be okay. But I always have water to offer them. But you know how a goat is. If they're thirsty, they'll drink the shit out of it. If they're not, they act like it's nothing, right? Mm-hmm. So when I'm going into areas like that, water weighs 8 pounds a gallon. I need water. They need water. So I'll have just one goat carry 2 gallons of water, which is enough for everybody. Mm-hmm. And generally, that's enough to get me by. But, you know, I have a lot of goat power. Some trips I'll go on, I have 8 packers. And all my packers carry 50 to 70. So for me to sacrifice one goat to pack everybody's water is no big deal. Right. So I make the goats pack my water and their water if I'm going into high elevation. But yes, that is one of the things that I have found has been misspoken on behalf of goats. Yes, they're very closely related to a camel. Yes, they can tank up. But if they're in a dry environment and they're working their asses off, they need water.
Right. And that was the situation. There wasn't nothing. A lot of green feed for them, so they were thirsty.
Right. Yeah, that late season stuff, if there's not rain or moisture and everything's dry, they need water. Okay. Yep.
Okay. On the note, you just talked about pack weights. How do you know? I mean, you have to know the weight of your goat, and then you do a third of their body weight, or what, you know, and they obviously have to be different shape levels of what they can pack. What's your...
Right. Yeah. Well, so because I pack all summer long, I know how everybody's doing, right? Mm-hmm. So the summer trips never necessitate as much gear. So very often during the summer, I'm going to put like I do half my days. So if I'm packing with 8 and I'm trying to get everybody in shape, I'll only load 4 on one day. And then I do like a light goat, dark goat. So all the dark goats get loaded today, all the light goats get loaded tomorrow, and I'll rotate them. And because I want everybody getting in shape, but I don't want to be beating them up. So by the time hunting season comes around, everybody's ass kicked. But I have a lot of goats, so I have that option because I have goat power. Way I recommend that people do it is if we're looking for a good goat that's super nimble, that can go off terrain and do all that different stuff, and we want a goat that'll pack into 9, 10, and 11 years old, it's the same as you and me. If I put a 100-pound pack on you for 10 seasons in a row, I'm going to shorten your hiking life. If we're always maxing our goats out on what they're going to carry, what happens is their pastures break down, that part in their ankle that's right there, and their dew claws will start touching the ground. That's going to be where a goat's going to break down most often is in the pasture. And so what I try to do is I try to keep my goats consistently about 20%, except for when I really need it, which is during hunting season. Gotcha. So I like 20 to 25%. Most goats can handle that really, really easy. I don't get up into that 30, 35% unless I really need it. And when I do, I account for the fact that they're not going to be as nimble. They're not going to be able to jump big deadfalls. They're not as mobile as they would be when they're really heavily loaded down. I mean, some of my goats still are, but definitely the weaker goats will have difficulty navigating tough terrain with heavy packs.
And when they are, say, running that 20% and they are a strong goat, how far can they go in a day? How many miles can a goat go?
So last year when I was trying to get out of the backcountry because the storm was rolling in, I did 18.7 miles and it took us 10 hours. And mm-hmm. So we did that in one day. And we only took one break for about 10 minutes and we had about 3 river crossings in there. And it was most of it was up and down. So we had the majority we were coming out. It was a slow down the whole way. And then the other end of that perspective is I did a 17.5 mile day, listen to this shit, with 9,000 feet in elevation. And my goats were about half loaded, 35-pound packs. And we did the last 3 hours in the dark. Everybody's ass was kicked, but they all made it. And they were in really good shape then. But that's what's possible. There are very few stock animals who can do shit like that. That's freaking impressive. So they're studs.
Do they have any trouble in the dark? Because I've never really thought about that.
No, they kick ass. That little chiclet eye that they have turns into a big giant owl eye, right?
Satan's eye.
That's right. Yeah. It turns into a big giant owl eye, and they're great at night. In fact, we ran our headlamps, both ran out on that trip, and we were following goats and, you know, kind of we were on cliffy stuff and everybody did super good.
Huh. Have you ever, you haven't been around them like rifle shot wise, if that really spooks the shit out of them. I imagine it's goat dependent or no.
No. So I do tons of work in my pasture building stuff because I'm kind of a tinkerer and I'm always building this stuff. How those goats sit right next to me with the nail gun going off all the time. And I've shot around them a lot and they just, they really, I mean, you've seen a scared goat before. A big lightning crack goes off or something falls. Everybody runs to you. They don't run away from you like a horse or a llama. They all come to you because you're their sense of safety. But nah, it's an easy, it's easier to train a goat not to be gun shy than it is a dog. Super easy. It's the same process. You know, you shoot a little bit further away. You shoot a little bit closer, shoot a little bit closer, shoot a little bit closer. Love them up. Let them know everything's okay. And they don't even think about it. It's not a big deal at all. And again, if they do spook, they're not going to spook away. They're going to spook to you.
And then what about like backcountry food? What are you feeding them in the backcountry?
Nothing. I've never brought anything for them.
No kidding.
I just let them do their thing. I let them find their food.
That's good to know.
Interesting.
Think about that. They just
eat
shit on along the way.
Yeah. The goal. Go ahead. So the goal always should be that you need to account for the fact that an adult wether under stress is going to need about 2 hours to eat in the morning and 2 hours to eat in the evening. So if that means, you know, you get up, you grind them out, you hunt them hard, well, at 11 o'clock, you need to sit your ass down, glass something up and let them browse around you, right? Let them browse for an hour, move along. Just make sure they get, you know, 3 to 4 hours of browse time. I always let them browse in camp. So, you know, everybody kind of, they get a system. Everybody's got a bell on. Sometimes I'll be like, do you guys hear the goats? I don't hear the goats. And then I go, goats. And everybody comes running. You know, they all come in. Okay, there they are. You know, that kind of stuff. But they generally won't wander any further than they can see me and hear me. They always want to stay close enough, but they kind of eat in a perimeter around camp. And they do the same when I'm always giving them opportunities to browse throughout the day and hunting.
What kind of vegetation are they eating where you're at?
So remember, a goat eats almost exactly like a mule deer, and he's a browser. So he's going to eat twigs, sticks, leaves. Grass is the lowest on their list that they want to eat. You give them a choice of a nice juicy end of a stick that's freshly cut off or a pine tree, as you've seen. Oh, they're going to choose that over a blade of grass, right?
Pine needles. They love pine needles.
They do.
Why, I do not know, but they do.
They do. Yeah, that's a natural wormer for them too, by the way. One of the biggest things you could do is get your neighbors to trim their pine trees and bring them to you. Well, it's a really good natural wormer. And the other thing to be careful of is, real quick, sorry, don't forget that any pitted fruit can kill them. So cherries, apricots, choke cherries, any pitted fruit has cyanide both in the bark and the leaves and the actual pit itself. So you want to be careful to never let them eat that. They will die. Also, probably one of the biggest killers of goats is decorative plants. So they get out of your pasture, they go over to the neighbors and they eat their flowers. Lots of times that shit's super poisonous for them.
Right.
So you got to be careful about that. What were you going to say? Sorry about that.
We were talking about pine needles, and I go out in the wintertime and the fall and the spring, and I cut boughs off the pine trees that we have around the house, and I throw it in the pen, and they just gobble it up. So I do.
Oh, it's a battle. Yeah.
But, I mean, they seem to like it, so that's about the only thing that's green around there with 2 feet of snow, you know, so.
Totally. No, they love it. I ask all my neighbors if they're trimming their pine trees to bring them.
Sure.
What about fir trees? We've got a shit ton of fir trees up here.
All that stuff. Yeah. And literally almost any kind of trimming. Have you guys ever looked at my live feed where you can watch my goats in the pasture?
I've watched it.
Okay. Okay, so for those of your listeners that are listening, it's just Pat Goat TV. If you go to Twitch, Twitch is like a gamer live feed thing, but they have a really good live feed platform. And they just, if you Google Pat Goat TV, you can see my whole setup. Well, in my setup and my play structure and my barn and my kid thing and then my milking system, you'll see like sticks and stuff laying all over the ground, because when anybody trims anything, they just bring them, and I train my neighbors just to set them in the driveway, and then I just throw them out to the goats, because remember, a goat loves and needs bark too. So they'll eat bark, and it's a form of basically fiber for them. So that's an important part of their diet as well. And so to give them that natural forage is really, really good for them.
Yeah, I've tried to incorporate some of that into the fencing where there's brush, and they've just about ate everything. You know, I know they like it. I'm sure it's good for them. So,
for sure, yeah, for sure.
So you hauling in water and zero food? That's good to know.
Yeah, I only haul in water when I know I'm going to be camped above water level multiple days. So it's not a regular thing for me to haul water, but I have literally never hauled food, not once in 4,000 trail miles that I got now.
What? And then on the same kind of note, but you're hunting wise, you came out with your own saddle and your own sawbuck. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, for the reality is we get into goats because they're affordable, and I get that. At the same time, one of the problems with goats is that we have everything from an alpine that's shaped like this to a boer that's shaped like this. And to put a crossbuck on a goat that's rigid, that can't adjust to their back, only allows for about 10% contact. So we're asking our goats to just crush it for us. And then it's like you or me putting a Walmart backpack on and trying to have it be comfortable, right? It's the same thing, but even worse for them. So the saddle that we invented has an adjustability both this way, because what happens is that you also have that pot-bellied goat that's actually shaped this way, you know, that big rumen.
Yeah.
So some of them will have that big rumen, and if you have a rigid saddle this way, then all the pressure's on the backside on their rumen, and that's really uncomfortable for them. So our adjustable saddle both shifts this way and this way, so you can custom fit a goat. And then on top of it, our pannier system is the only system out there that allows a hunter to be able to pack a huge load and then effectively roll them up and contain them to pack a meat load. Because that's the problem. If you're packing an elk out on a goat and you have a kick-ass packer, the most you're going to put on them is 70 pounds. Let's just say 70 pounds is max. Now, I got goats that'll carry more than that, but 70 pounds, that's a lot. Well, a 35-pound packet of meat is only about this big. It's not a bunch of meat, right? So how do you take a pannier that's this big and have it comfortably pack a little package of meat this big? Well, that's my pannier. It's made to roll up, cross over, and carry that load really efficiently dead center on each side. So you can go in heavy or go out light or whatever you want. You have variability. You can carry really big light loads, and you can carry very small heavy loads in one pannier. I used to actually, back in the day when I wasn't making my own stuff, I actually had a big pannier that I'd go in, and I'd stuff a small pannier inside of it so that I had two options on the way back out. So I just got sick of doing that and just made my own. Same with the saddle. I got sick of my poor goats having big saddle rubs, and you know that they're really again, they're what I without talking poorly, but there's a lot of good people in this business. There's just not a lot of good saddles.
I will give one public service announcement. Make sure you watch Mark's video about his panners before you get to the mountains, or you'll be cussing Mark like a son of a bitch.
They are a little complicated on how to roll and stuff. I would agree. did you guys actually, once you figured it out, did you get it figured it out?
I think so.
I think we have the gist.
I think so.
But we were like,
you got the meat out.
it was a goat fuck for a while. I'm not going to lie.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, well, maybe I need to do a more elaborate how to do a meatload video. How's that sound?
Oh, I think it's very utilitarian. It has lots of options, but me and him were kind of handicapped. We couldn't quite figure out all the options.
It would have been better if we'd had the laptop in front of us watching the videos. We were trying to screw with it, but we didn't. So we're going on memory. That isn't good.
Yeah, well, yeah. I need to do a better job of explaining it then. I take it for granted because we put it together. But it is really hard to have one pannier do two things. And it does require a little bit of conversion. And again, rolling that up, crisscrossing it over the top and hooking to the other corners. And yeah, I get it. It is a little strappy. But once you figure it out, people figure it out and it works well. So I'll pray for you. How's that sound?
There you go.
Kelly was looking at me and I was looking at him. The goat was looking at us like, what in the hell are you putting on my back? And it wasn't your fault. It was our fault.
Well, I disagree. I need to explain it better, make it easier. Maybe I need to make color-coded Bubba-proof packs. Maybe that, right?
The North Idaho edition. We need the North Idaho edition.
I need it too, man. I need it too. That's fun. So go ahead.
Any more? I don't think so.
Well, let's get into something a little bit that pays your bills. Let's talk about Top End Adventures and what it is and what you're doing with it and how do people get a hold of you to talk about it.
Sure. Well, you know, so Top End Adventures is my hunt consulting firm. I've been doing that for a long time. A lot of people misunderstand what I do. So I'll just explain it. I'm just the guy that's been bow hunting the world for 30 years. And so I've been on every continent chasing almost every critter. And so, you know, the outfitters are all great folks. They're great folks. But the reality is that one guy across the canyon may have 10 times the operation the other one does. But if you call them both, they both got the same really good story, right? I've never talked to an outfitter once that's ever told me that he sucks. Never, right? And some of them do. In fact, a lot of them do. But the really good ones, the top 30% of the industry, that's who I deal with. And because I have longstanding relationships with them, I'm like the guy that you call to go on any kind of hunt you're looking for, whether it's, you know, I have access on 16.5 million private acres in the elk woods. So if you're looking for what, you know, you want to go after in terms of a big bull, a discounted bull or whatever, or if you want to go on an African safari, I've done it, did it, been there. And the benefit is my service to my clients is free. You don't pay a dime more to book a hunt through me. So because the outfitter pays me on the back end as a referral fee. So it's probably not much of a stretch to realize that outfitters aren't the best marketers, aren't necessarily the best businessmen. So they need somebody with me that has a large group of clients that can put my clients with them and they pay me a referral fee. So my client, if they found that outfitter directly, would pay the same exact price. So it's no different to the client other than he's not trying to just guess and hope that when he shows up, shit's going to be like he was told. You know what I mean? So really, guys, just can find me at Top End Adventures. I'm sure you'll post my information here as well. My specialty is obviously always what you were raised doing, which is elk and deer. But in the same token, I've been to Africa a ton of times and Argentina, New Zealand, you know, Europe, all over the world. And I've been really blessed with a life of chasing critters. And I feel like I know some of the best people out there. I've been doing it for a long time.
So does that cover, you cover like whitetails to Canada for, you know, deer whitetails up there, all the way up to Alaska for brown bears, all of that?
Correct. Yeah. And the other nice thing about that is very often a guy's like, you know, I mean, it's not like you go to shopping for a brown bear hunt school, right? Most people go after a brown bear once, right? They only go after it once. And just know that a lot of people use TV as their resource to find an outfitter. Just know almost none of my good outfitters would give a TV a free show to go kill a brown bear, right? I mean, it's just not something that a lot of people, an outfitter can afford to give that up. So and so what ends up happening is the TV resource can work as a referral, but it's not necessarily always the best referral, and neither are shows. Usually these guys that have the top, and when I say shows, I mean sportsman shows, right? So usually the guys that have the top stuff, they don't go to shows. They don't have a great website. They just stay full because people know their name. It's like a referral business. And so those are the guys that I'll generally work with. But, you know, a good brown bear hunt will run $18,000 to $32,000 now. And who's to know which one's what and which one's better. And it can really get crazy expensive to make a bad choice. It just can't. So the nice thing is I'll have enough different choices to match a particular client's needs. So if one guy's not very fit and he needs to find that, then rather than that outfitter just telling him, well, I can handle you, I actually know he can handle them, right? So it's stuff like that.
So can somebody call you up and say, I want to go goat hunting, mountain goat hunting in BC, and I have $12,000, and you can say, yeah, I can do that, or no, I don't have anybody that can do that? Okay.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. You should know, you asked about whitetail. That's one of my weakest species. Mm-hmm. And the main reason is, yeah, I call them the reputation ruiners. Whitetail can make a great outfitter look bad, right? So I have a couple of slam dunk whitetail hunts, but I'm really strong in elk, moose, bear, all the stuff in North America, especially in the West. I'm really strong in Africa for Cape Buffalo and dangerous game species. I'm really strong in Argentina, New Zealand. You know, there's not a lot of places I feel uncomfortable with. The two things I won't ever help clients to do is to break the law, and I also won't help them to put their lives in jeopardy. I will not book a Russian brown bear hunt. If you want some of that, you go have some of that, but I can't guarantee your safety by putting you there. The two worst places in the world to find a high-quality outfitter are Russia and Eastern Canada. It's just really, really hard. These super socialistic countries are very, very difficult to find people get after it.
Eastern Canada's socialist?
Well, it's French-Canadian, right?
More to me. I totally believe you.
Okay.
I've dealt with French-Canadians.
Unfortunately, it's like ingrained socialism. So where you find ingrained long-term socialism, you also find an outfitting community that has forgotten how to be of service. And it's really hard. Even if I find a really good outfitter, then the guide will shit the bed. Or I got a really good guide and the outfitter shits the bed. So I literally basically don't do much business, if any at all, from Saskatchewan over, and I do nothing in Russia anymore. I've just sworn those two places off. There may be some great guys there, but I don't know who they are, and I'm tired of looking. So
in most times, can you get them in the same year, or is this something people got to get a hold of you a couple years in advance?
That's a good question. So I work with the kind of outfitters that generally stay full. And so I always tell people the early bird gets the worm. Mm-hmm. If you can call me 18 months in advance to the hunt that you're going to want to go on, but just know some of my sheep guys, I have to book literally 24 to 36 months in advance. Wow. The really good guys in the business have a long list of people that want to hunt with them. And those are the guys that you want to hunt with. And so that's why, to know a guy like me, I have a spreadsheet on every client. I help you to get your points. I help you to coordinate a multi-year strategy. You know, I mean, if you got a bucket list, then I take that bucket list and we tackle it over a number of years. And if we need to be thinking 3 years in advance about your brown bear, but we can get you on a kick-ass mule deer hunt this year, then cool, everybody's having fun. And then we'll fill in with these fun off species like Awdad. And like, I don't know if you just saw that Awdad piece I released, but I was the first one to ever kill a free-range Awdad on film, spot and stock with a bow. That stuff still exists. And the ranch that I found, it's the ranch. If guys want to go chase and have a chance to legitimately kill a free range Awdad with a bow, the ranch that I just hunted is the best I've ever seen. The lay of the land, the number of sheep, it's incredible. And it's a $5,500 sheep hunt. It's an affordable, super kick-ass fun sheep hunt. So really fun. Just stuff like that.
On that note, I'm kind of dumb to the Awdad. What the hell is the difference between an Awdad and a Barbary sheep?
It's the same species, just two different names. Gotcha. Yeah. So they come from the Barbary Coast in northern Africa and Chad Africa, and they put them in three different places in Texas, and now they free range and they're thriving. And I've killed two of them now, and they're a super cool critter. They're as close as you've ever got to sticking a goat and a sheep together. And for your listeners that or watchers that want to watch on my YouTube channel, Top End Adventures, that Awdad video that I just did is just released, and then that's where all the Elkville videos are as well.
I really like those Elkville videos. Those are cool.
Yeah, that second year we killed three bulls in 4 days, and we packed out 1,000 pounds in elk in camp in two loads with goats.
Wow. How many?
I know. I think I had seven on that trip.
Oh, those are
yeah. So we had We had loads too, right?
I will say there's an asterisk by your goats because your goats are almost as big as small horses.
They are. They're big. Yeah, they're big. Yeah.
Well, cool. So where you got a lot of shit going on. Where can people stalk you? Where do you want them to stalk you, I should say?
Well, you know, I mean, again, I love to help people whichever way. You know, that's the fun part is I get to make a living and I get to help people doing it. So if people want help with Packoats, packoats.com is just super interesting or super easy to find me. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for me on Top End Adventures, it's just topendadventures.com. My website's still kind of under construction. I used to be one of the owners of Outdoors International and I sold out of that part of my company and then formed my own because I just kind of wanted more of that, you know, small boutique experience. And, you know, I'm getting long in the tooth. I've been doing this for a long time. So I kind of wanted to be my own one man band with the same connections and really taking care of people. So Top End Adventures or packoats.com, either of those places. And I got all the Facebook and Instagram and all that shit too. They can find me there. Just search my name.
Mark, we really appreciate your time. You answered a lot of questions for me anyways.
Yeah. So. Me too. It's been a good experience.
Yeah, and for those guys, since we spent most of our time on Packoats, for the guys that are looking to get in, go to packoats.com, listen to the FAQ, watch the FAQ, the frequently asked questions. Listen to a couple of the podcasts, and if you still like what you hear and you're not scared off, then dive in. And the first and most important thing that you do is buying the right goats, because everybody thinks their neighbor has the right goats, and I can guarantee you your neighbor probably doesn't have the right goats, because you will invest 4 years in a baby, and at the end of those 4 years, if that goat is a piece of crap, you just invest.
You still there?
Time, money, and energy. You know, I don't know.
We freezed for a minute. You're back on now. I think you're good.
Okay. I don't know what happened. Sorry about that. So anyway, it's really important to make sure you get started with the right goats. And then once they're ready to pack, just watch my YouTube videos and 90% of what you're going to need is there. And people can always contact me directly. I think people get concerned about calling me. Don't be. I'm glad to do it. I love talking goats and I love visiting about it and I love helping.
That's one thing that's been really, really stressful and struggling for us is trying to find somebody to talk to that knows what they're talking about, because every time we turn around, it's the wrong thing. So what you're saying and what you're telling us now is a really big help for us. So
glad to. Anytime. I always call back and I always pick up. So nobody ever has to hesitate. I mean, the freaking solicitors in today's world have made picking up a strange number a pain in the balls. So make sure you leave me a message and I'll call you back, right?
I will say, if I've texted you in the last month, you've been within minutes. And I'm not saying that you're like that every day, but within minutes.
So how is that?
Oh, yeah. I'm a bad communicator. Mark has been good. If you try to get a hold of me, you're probably fucked, because I'm really slow. But Desiree.
So he's.
Desiree Stark said that you were super helpful when they got into goats, and you're a great guy.
Oh, well, thanks. I really enjoyed being on with you guys. It was fun. And it, you know, I think if any of your listeners just know, I mean, with goats, it's this, but also too, if you're frustrated into trying to get that buck that you've always tried to get and you're this ardent watcher of those systems and everything, I have so many neat options for you with guaranteed tags and private ranches and even public land where you can get deeper than you can get that. You know, and there's just some places you have to have a guide. You have to have a guide in Canada. You have to have a guide for certain critters in Alaska. And if you want to go experience New Zealand, I got the cheap guy and I got the high-end guy. I just give me a chance to earn your business. I promise you will enjoy dealing with me, and call me direct. And that's what I do. I sit here during the day in the front of this computer and I pack in on the weekends. So don't call on the weekends.
All right, Mark. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, appreciate you. Bye-bye.